to WTUR 770 AM, Youngstown, Toronto.
Assalamualaikum, how are you today? I hope you're doing well.
Stick around to be inspired.
Welcome listeners to another edition of A Muslim's Perspectives. This is your host Alim Ali, and our selection from the Quran this week is taken from chapter 3, verses 102 to 115. Let's listen as it's recited.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله حق تقاته ولا تموتن إلا وأنتم مسلمون واعتصموا بحبل الله جميعا ولا تفرقوا واذكروا نعمة الله عليكم إذ كنتم أعداء فألف بين قلوبكم فأصبحتم بنعمته إخوانا وكنتم على شفا حفرة من النار فأنقذكم منها كذلك يبين الله لكم آياته لعلكم تهتدون ولتكن منكم أمة يدعون إلى الخير ويأمرون بالمعروف وينهون عن المنكر وأولئك هم المفلحون ولا تكونوا كالذين تفرقوا واختلفوا من بعد ما جاءهم البينات وأولئك لهم عذاب عظيم يوم تبيض وجوه وتسود وجوه فأما الذين اسودت وجوههم أكفرتم بعد إيمانكم فذوقوا العذاب بما كنتم تكفرون وأما الذين ابيضت وجوههم ففي رحمة الله هم فيها خالدون تلك آيات الله نتلوها عليك بالحق وما الله يريد ظلما للعالمين ولله ما في السماوات وما في الأرض وإلى الله ترجع الأمور كنتم خير أمة أخرجت للناس تأمرون بالمعروف وتنهون عن المنكر وتؤمنون بالله ولو آمن أهل الكتاب لكان خيرا لهم منهم المؤمنون وأكثرهم الفاسقون لن يضروكم إلا أذى وإن يقاتلوكم يولوكم الأدبار ثم لا ينصرون ضربت عليهم الذلة أينما ثقفوا إلا بحبل من الله وحبل من الناس وباءوا بغضب من الله وضربت عليهم المسكنة ذلك بأنهم كانوا يكفرون بآيات الله ويقتلون الأنبياء بغير حق ذلك بما عصوا وكانوا يعتدون ليسوا سواء من أهل الكتاب أمة قائمة يتلون آيات الله آناء الليل وهم يسجدون يؤمنون بالله واليوم الآخر ويأمرون بالمعروف وينهون عن المنكر ويسارعون في الخيرات وأولئك من الصالحين وما يفعلوا من خير فلن يكفروه والله عليم بالمتقين.
That selection is taken from the Book of Guidance for All Mankind, the Quran, from our God, our singular Creator, our God Almighty, taken from the book Chapter 3, verses 102 to 115. An English translation follows. In the name of God, most gracious, most merciful. O believers, be mindful of God in the way He deserves, and do not die except in a state of full submission to Him. And hold firmly together to the rope of God, and do not be divided. Remember God's favor upon you when you were enemies. Then He united your hearts, so you, by His grace, became brothers. And you were at the brink of a fiery pit, and He saved you from it. This is how God makes His revelations clear to you, so that you may be rightly guided. Let there be a group among you who call others to goodness, encourage what is good, and forbid what is evil. It is they who will be successful. And do not be like those who split into sects and deferred after clear proofs had come to them. If it is they who will suffer a tremendous punishment. On that day some faces will be bright while others gloomy. To the gloomy face it will be said, "Did you disbelieve after having believed? So taste the punishment for your disbelief." And as for those who are bright-faced, they will be in God's mercy, where they will remain forever. These are God's revelations. We recite to you, O Prophet, in truth. And God desires no injustice to His creation. To God alone belongs whatever is in the heavens and whatever is on the earth. And to God all matters will be returned for judgment. You are the best community ever raised for humanity. You encourage good, forbid evil, and believe in God. Had the people of the book believed, it would have been better for them. Some of them are faithful, but most are rebellious. They can never inflict harm on you, except a little annoyance. But if they meet you in battle, they will flee, and they will have no helpers. They will be stricken with disgrace wherever they go, unless they are protected by a covenant with Allah, with God, or by a treaty with the people. They have invited the displeasure of God and have been branded with misery for rejecting God's revelations and murdering His prophets unjustly. This is a fair reward for their disobedience and violations. Yet they are not all alike. There are some among the people of the book who are upright, who recite God's revelations throughout the night, prostrating in prayer. They believe in God and the last day, encourage good and forbid evil, and race with one another in doing good. They are truly among the righteous. They will never be denied the reward for any good they have done. And God has perfect knowledge of those mindful of Him. And here is a summary of the classical tafsir of this section of the Quran, chapter 3, verses 102 to 115. It's based mainly from classical scholars such as Ibn Kathir, At-Tabari, Al-Qurtubi, and Al-Baghawi. These verses form a coherent section addressing God consciousness and steadfastness, unity of the Muslim community, warning against division, the role of the Muslim Ummah as a moral community, recognition of righteous people among the people of the book. If we were to turn now to verse 102, this speaks about true consciousness of God. O you who believe, fear God as He should be feared, and do not die except in a state of submission to Him. Classical scholars explain that fear God as He should be feared means complete obedience, avoiding disobedience, remembering God constantly, being grateful for His blessings. According to Ibn Kathir, early companions such as Abdullah ibn Masud explained it as to obey Him and not disobey Him, to remember Him and not forget Him, to thank Him and not be ungrateful. Scholars also clarified that these verses were later explained by Quran chapter 64 verse 16, which says, fear God as much as you are able. Thus, believers must strive sincerely, even if perfection is beyond human capacity. Verse 103, holding firmly to the rope of Allah. And hold firmly to the rope of God altogether, and do not become divided. What does it mean, the rope of Allah, or the rope of God? Classical interpretations include the Quran, Islam itself, the covenant of God, the unity of faith. At-Tabari favors the meaning the Quran and Islam as they bind the community together. In the historical context, this verse refers to the reconciliation of two Medinian tribes, the Aus and the Khazraj. Before Islam, they fought long wars, especially the Battle of Bu'ath. Islam united them as brothers. The verse reminds Muslims that God turn former enemies into brothers. Verse 104, the duty of calling to good. Let there arise among you a group inviting to good, enjoining what is right and forbidding what is wrong. Classical scholars derive from this verse the obligation of inviting to good. Amr bil maruf, commanding good. Nahi al munkar, forbidding evil. Al-Qurtubi explains that the obligation is collective, fard kifaya. If a group fulfills it, the whole community is absolved. this verse became a foundational principle of Islamic social ethics. Verse 105, warning against division. And do not be like those who became divided and deferred after clear proofs came to them. Classical tafsir or explanation identifies this primarily as referring to divisions among earlier religious communities, particularly the Jews and the Christians who split into sects despite revelation. The warning is that division after knowledge brings severe punishment. Verses 106 and 107 deals with the Day of Judgment. These verses describe two groups on the Day of Resurrection. Those with darkened faces, they are described as those who rejected faith after believing, they fell into hypocrisy or denied clear truth. Those with bright faces, these are believers who remain steadfast, upheld the truth. According to Ibn Kathir, brightness represents joy, honor, and salvation, while darkness signifies humiliation and punishment. Verse 108, Divine Justice. These are the verses of God which we recite to you in truth. Classical scholars say this verse emphasizes God does not wrong anyone. Punishment comes only because of human choice and disbelief. Verse 109, Sovereignty of God. And to Allah, or to God, belongs whatever is in the heavens and whatever is on earth. This verse reaffirms God's absolute ownership. Ultimate judgment belongs only to Him. It also reminds believers that all matters return to God. Verse 110, The best community. You are the best nation brought forth for mankind. According to classical commentators, the Muslim Ummah is called a blessed community because it fulfills three conditions: enjoining good, forbidding evil, and believing in God. Ibn Kathir cites the companion Abu Huraira who said, "You are the best for people because you bring them out from disbelief into faith." However, scholars stress that the honor is conditional. If the community abandons these principles, it loses that distinction. Verse 111, Limited harm from opponents. They will not harm you except for some annoyance. Classical tafsir explains this verse as reassurance that hostile groups cannot truly destroy the community unless Muslims abandon their faith. The harm is limited to insult, harassments, and conflicts. Ultimate victory belongs to those who remain faithful. Verse 112, Humiliation of Rejection. This verse states that humiliation is imposed upon those who reject divine guidance unless they seek protection under a covenant. Classical scholars interpret this as referring historically to communities who opposed the Prophet but survived under treaties or protection. Verse 113, Not all are the same. Among the people of the book is a community that stands in obedience. This verse corrects a generalization. Classical commentators say it refers to righteous individuals among the people of the book who accepted truth, such as Abdullah ibn Salam and Najashi. They recited the scriptures, prayed sincerely, and sought truth. Verse 114 and 115, Qualities of the Righteous. These verses describe their characteristics: belief in God and the last day, commanding good, forbidding evil, hastening toward righteous deeds. Classical scholars emphasize that God does not ignore any good deeds, even from people outside of the community who sincerely seek truth. The overall theme of these verses, the classical tafsir sees this passage as establishing five central principles: God consciousness, unity of the community, responsibility to promote justice and morality, warning against sectarian division, recognition of righteousness wherever it appears. In summary, these verses define the moral mission of the Muslim Ummah: to remain united in faith, uphold righteousness, avoid division, and serve humanity through justice and guidance.
We are one ummah, one big family, from every country, near and far. Allah made us brothers and sisters. Let's stand together, just as we are.
Time to unite, time to unite. Muslims together for what is right. We all pray and we all care. Allah's mercy is everywhere.
East or west, we're all one under the same shining sun. Different places, different lands, but one ummah holding hands.
Time to unite, time to unite. Muslims together for what is right. We all pray and we all care.
Short or tall, Allah is one, He loves us all. Five times prayer, one Qibla, two. One big family, me and you.
Time to unite, time to unite. Muslims together for what is right. We all pray and we all care. Allah's mercy is everywhere.
It's high time we act as one, helping each sister and brother, everyone. No one homeless, no one alone. We share our blessings from what we own.
Time to unite, time to unite. Muslims together for what is right. We all pray and we all care. Allah's mercy is everywhere.
Helping the poor, sharing our food, spreading salam and words that are good. When we stand side by side, shoulder to shoulder, our hearts grow warm, our faith grows bolder.
Time to unite, time to unite. Muslims together for what is right. We all pray and we all care. Allah's mercy is everywhere. Time to unite, time to unite. Muslims together for what is right. We all pray and we all care.
Allah's mercy is everywhere. Helping each other with love and cheer.
Love and cheer.
Inshallah we'll shine so bright. Walking together in Allah's light.
Indeed, the term Ummah, what does it mean? It is a central concept in Islam. It refers to the global community of Muslims who are united by their faith in God and the message of the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings of God be with him. Ummah means community, nation, or collective body. In the Islamic context, it specifically refers to all Muslims worldwide who share the same beliefs, spiritual identity, and moral responsibility under Islam, regardless of race, ethnicity, language, or nationality. The Quran describes the Ummah as a community bound by faith and tasked with moral responsibility. In chapter 21, verse 92, indeed this Ummah of yours is one Ummah, and I am your Lord, so worship me. Another verse emphasizes its ethical mission. As we saw in chapter 3, verse 110, you are the best Ummah brought forth for humanity. You enjoy what is right and forbid what is wrong, and believe in God. The key characteristics of the Ummah: its unity of faith, members share belief in one God and the message of the Prophet, moral responsibility. The Ummah is tasked with promoting justice and righteousness, brotherhood and sisterhood. Spiritual bonds transcend ethnic and national divisions. Collective accountability: Muslims are responsible for supporting and protecting one another. The Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings of God be with him, described the unity of the Ummah in a famous hadith. He said, the believers in their mutual love, mercy and compassion are like a single body. If one part suffers, the whole body responds with sleeplessness and fever. The first practical expression of the Ummah emerged in Medina when the Prophet, peace and blessings of God be with him, established a community that included Muslims and allied groups under a shared social covenant, often referred to as the Constitution of Medina. The Ummah, therefore, is a spiritual community Oral Collective, a transnational brotherhood of believers. Its defined principle is unity in faith and responsibility before God, rather than political borders or ethnic identity. But since the fall of the Ottoman Empire, the formal abolition of the Ottoman Caliphate by Mustafa Kemal Ataturk in 1924, it marked a profound transformation in how the Ummah functioned in political and social terms. Before this moment, the Ummah had both a spiritual and a political dimension. After it, the concept increasingly became spiritual and symbolic rather than politically unified. Before 1924, Ummah as a political civilization. For centuries under the Ottoman Empire, the Caliph was widely recognized as a symbolic leader of the Muslim world. Although Muslim lands were diverse and not owned, directly ruled by the Ottomans, the Caliphate provided a unifying political authority, a symbol of global Muslim solidarity, a framework for Islamic law and governance, diplomatic representation of Muslim interests. Thus, the Ummah was understood as both a faith community and a civilizational political entity. The decline of the Ottoman state occurred alongside European colonial expansion. Powers such as the United Kingdom and France divided Muslim lands into separate territories. One famous example is the Sykes-Picot Agreement, which carved up large parts of the Middle East into artificial borders. These borders created nation-states such as Iraq, Syria, Jordan. The result was the replacement of the civilizational idea of the Ummah with the modern nation-state system. After the Caliphate's abolition, Muslim societies increasingly organized themselves around national identity rather than the Ummah. Examples include Turkish nationalism under Mustafa Kemal Ataturk, Arab nationalism promoted by leaders such as Jamal Abdel Nasser, territorial states prioritizing national interests over collective Muslim unity. This meant loyalty shifted from religious civilization into national state. The Ummah as a moral and spiritual ideal, even though political unity declined, the idea of the Ummah did not disappear. Instead, it became a spiritual bond among Muslims worldwide, a moral concept emphasizing solidarity, a source of activism and reform movements. Many Islamic movements and scholars continue to call for greater unity and cooperation among Muslims, even within the nation-state system. Today, the Ummah exists in two overlapping ways: spiritual Ummah, shared belief in Islam, global sense of brotherhood and responsibility. Political fragmentation: nearly 50 Muslim majority nation states, competing national interests, and limited unified political authority. Organizations such as the Organization of Islamic Cooperation attempt to provide coordination, but they do not function like a unified political authority. Modern Muslim thinkers debate several questions. Should the Ummah remain primarily spiritual and cultural? Can there be a political cooperation without caliphate? How can Muslims balance national citizenship and global religious identity? These questions remain central to Muslim political thought today. But in the meantime, we see that there's a constant onslaught on Muslims worldwide.
This is our time. Unite together for justice in Palestine. No matter your faith or community, this is a crime against humanity. Gods are turned into a prison camp. A apartheid war divides the West Bank.
We are the people, and this is our time. Stand out.
last night I couldn't sleep, but when I did I could hear bombs in my dreams. Nightmare situation, how could they be so evil? Making murders out of children and innocent people. We expect the bombs, not knowing where next. Huddle in the corner of my room, trying to protect my little brother as the building shakes like it's possessed. But nothing stronger than the will of the oppressed. I bomb back with my lyrics and rhymes, living the times, trying to break the Palestinian mind. What's hiding in the clouds hanging over my head? My dad risks his life outside to buy bread. The fourth war in my 12th year. At this stage I'm numb, no I haven't feel scared. There's nothing I can do in this case to stay safe. I'm brave, even though this house could be my grave. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location, shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location, shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation. Mothers mourn, fighting with grief. White sheets covered by his death. Lie on the streets, buildings turn to ash, but my mind is made of steel. So it doesn't take much for me to heal. Won't lose the will to live or lose our minds. My auntie lost her home, so she lost her life, but she's still alive, but traumatized by the bombs that flew in and dropped that night. My sister couldn't sleep, tried to stop her cries. I said it was fireworks, I was telling her lies. Where's the compassion? This is heartless. It's like they want us all living in darkness. Cutting off water and electricity for hours. They're knocking towers, but that's not knocking the power that I have in my pen. When I'm writing, I'm unstoppable. The microphone is the only escape possible, cause that's the way that I can speak my mind. I wonder how does the fighter pilot sleep at night, knowing he can turn the city upside down all of a sudden. Slaughtering families with the push of a button. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location, shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location, shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation.
In times of crisis affecting Muslims across the world, a troubling pattern often appears. Many Muslim governments issue public statements expressing concern, solidarity, and sympathy for oppressed. Yet, behind the scenes, policies often continue that quietly accommodate powerful allies or maintain arrangements that contribute directly or indirectly to the very injustices being condemned. This raises an important question. How is such a contradiction justified? The answer most often given is the idea of national interest. In today's international system, governments are expected to prioritize the survival and stability of their states above everything else. Leaders calculate their actions based on economic security, diplomatic alliances, and military considerations. Confronting political actors or confronting powerful actors, even when moral principles are at stake, is often seen as risky or impractical. But from the perspective of Islamic teachings, this reasoning creates a profound moral tension. Allah, God, reminds believers in the Quran, O ye who believe, stand firmly for justice as witnesses for God, even it be against yourselves, your parents or your relatives. Chapter 4, verse 135. Justice in Islam is not selective. It is not dependent on convenience. It does not disappear when political pressure increases. The Prophet, peace and blessings of God be with him, reinforced this principle in a well-known teaching. Whoever among you sees wrongdoing, he said, let him change it with his hand. If he cannot, then with his tongue. And if he cannot, then with his heart. And that is the weakest of faith. This hadith reminds us that silence in the face of injustice is not neutrality. At best, it represents the weakest level of moral response. Yet modern political realities often push leaders toward silence or cautious diplomacy. Part of the explanation lies in history. Much of the political map of the Muslim world was shaped during the colonial era, after the collapse of the Ottoman order following the First World War. The region was divided into separate nation-states, each with its own borders, ruling elites, and security systems. Over time, these states develop priorities centered on protecting their own regimes and national interests. Issues affecting Muslims beyond their borders increasingly became matters of foreign policy rather than shared responsibility. But Islam offers a different vision. The Quran reminds, "Indeed, this community of yours is one community, and I am your Lord, so worship me." Chapter 21, verse 92. This idea of the Ummah was meant to transcend geography, ethnicity, and politics. It called believers to a bond based on faith, justice, and mutual responsibility. When political calculations override this moral bond, the distance between the prophetic ideal and modern political practice becomes painfully clear. Of course, governing a nation today is complex. Leaders must manage diplomacy, economic pressures, and security challenges in a difficult global environment. But Islamic teachings remind us that power itself is a trust. The Prophet, peace and blessings of God be with him, taught that every leader is a shepherd responsible for those under his care. Leadership is therefore not simply about maintaining authority. It is about safeguarding justice and protecting the vulnerable. History shows us that moral courage is rarely easy, but it is often what defines the legacy of leaders and nations. The Quran offers a final reminder. Do not incline toward those who do wrong, lest the fire touch you. Chapter 11, verse 113. In the end, the measure of leadership in Islam is not only political success or national stability. It is whether justice was upheld and whether the trust of the community was honored. These are questions not only for rulers, but for all of us as members of the global ummah, whose faith calls us to stand for what is right, even when it is difficult. And Allah knows best.
There's a man in a suit behind a mahogany desk. Says he's fighting for freedom, but I'm not impressed. Got a flag on his lapel and blood on his hands, making promises that no mother understands. He's never held a rifle, never dodged a shell, but he's real good at sending other boys to hell. Old men start the wars, young men fight and die. Rich men count their profits while the poor folks cry. When will we wake up? When will we see through? The only war worth fighting is the one for me and you. In the halls of power where the shadows meet, they're drawing up my maps while the body count's complete. From the banks of the Dnipro to Jerusalem's wall, they're playing their games while the mighty fall. But every bomb that drops, every life that's lost, someone's paying the ultimate cost. Old men start the wars, young men fight and die. Rich men count their profits while the poor folks cry. When will we wake up? When will we see through? The only war worth fighting is the one for me and you. There's a mother in Myanmar crying alone. Her village is burning, her family's gone. There's a father in Haiti, can't find his way through the chaos and violence day after day. While somewhere a general pins on a medal for turning the earth into hell's own kettle. They divide us by color, by creed and by clan, but we're all just people trying to make a stand for our children, our future, our peace of the sky. Why should any of us have to say goodbye to the ones that we love in the name of a cause that's written by others in their bloody laws? So I'm singing this song for the ones left behind, for the displaced, the forgotten, the deaf, dumb, and blind. To the madness that grips us, that won't let us go. There's a better way of living, and we all know that the earth has enough for every man's need, but never enough for any man's greed. Old men start the wars, young men fight and die. Rich men count their profits while the poor folks cry. But we can wake up, yes, we can see through. The only war worth fighting is the one for me and you. The only peace worth having is the one we make come true.
Stand as one in the name of Allah and His final command. The day of judgment will come soon, when the best of people will rise from their graves. We are Muslims, we are one. World of darkness and despair, evil forces drive the good from this earth. The pain and suffering is too much to bear, but the light of Allah will always prevail. We are Muslims, we are one.
Yes, indeed. And we always ask, how is Arab governments seemingly two-faced? They have a two-faced approach, publicly saying that they are not involved in these wars, whether it would be on the destruction of Palestine or whether it's what is taking place currently. They publicly say they are not involved, but privately they are accommodating and being complicit in the oppression being managed within their national interest. The situation that is often explained by the tension between Islamic moral obligations towards the Ummah and the political logic of the modern nation state. Many Arab governments and such organizations like the Organization of Islamic Countries, many Arab governments, they publicly affirm solidarity with oppressed Muslims, yet privately maintain policies that accommodate powerful allies or geopolitical realities. Understanding how this two-faced approach is justified, requiring how national interest has come to dominate political decision-making. Modern governments operate within a global system built around sovereign nation-states. In this system, leaders are expected to prioritize regime stability, economic security, military alliances, international diplomatic relationships. These priorities often override broader religious or civilizational consideration. For example, alliances with major powers, particularly the United States and other Western states, are frequently justified as essential for security guarantees, economic investment, or protection from regional rivals such as Iran. Within this framework, governments may publicly express solidarity with Muslim causes, but privately cooperate with policies that contradict these statements. The reasoning presented internally is often that survival of the state takes precedence over moral confrontation. Then there is the colonial era political structures. The modern political order of the Arab world emerged largely on the collapse of the Ottoman Empire following World War I. European powers divided the region into separate states through arrangements such as the Sykes-Picot Agreement. These new states were designed primarily for administrative control and geopolitical management, not for the preservation of a unified Islamic political community. As a result, each state developed its own ruling elite and security apparatus. Borders and rivalries discouraged transnational solidarity. Survival of the ruling system became the overriding priority. This structure incentivizes leaders to treat issues affecting the broader Ummah as external matters rather than internal obligations. Another way the contradiction is managed is through carefully crafted diplomatic language. Public statements often include expressions of concern, calls for restraint, humanitarian appeals, but these statements stop short of actions that could disrupt strategic relationships. In other words, symbolic solidarity replaces some substantive confrontation. This allows governments to maintain legitimacy among their populations while avoiding conflict and powerful partners. The Islamic teachings, however, frame leadership differently. The Prophet, peace and blessings of God be with him, emphasized moral responsibility over political convenience. A well-known hadith recording Sahih Muslim teaches that whoever among you sees wrongdoing, let him change it with his hands. Likewise, the Quran commands believers, stand firmly for justice as witnesses for God, and even if it's against yourself. Chapter 4, verse 135. From this perspective, leadership carries a moral trust that extends beyond borders or political expediency. This creates a deep tension between the prophetic conception of the Ummah, a moral community bound by justice and mutual responsibility. The modern state system, where survival, alliances, and economic stability dominate decision-making. When leaders justify silence or quiet cooperation with injustice under national interests, critics argue that they are prioritizing political power over the ethical legacy of the prophetic community. It is important to note that this dilemma is not unique to Arab governments. Many states across the world, Muslim and non-Muslim, face similar conflicts between moral ideals and geopolitical constraints. However, the issue is particularly sensitive in Muslim societies because the Quran and the example of the Prophet, peace and blessings of God be with him, emphasize unity, justice, accountability as foundation principles of governance. And Allah knows the best.
When I cry to the sky, la ilaha illallah. When my soul asks why, la ilaha illallah. When my heart gave way, la ilaha illallah. When he taught me through delay, la ilaha illallah. I begged him in sujood, why this pain again? But Allah never answered like other men. He let me ache, no vision, no dream. Because healing isn't loud, it flows unseen. He could have changed it all in just one word, but instead he made sure I truly heard. Not with my ears, but with my scars. So So I stop chasing Dunya and reach for the stars. وعسى أن تكرهوا شيئا وهو خير لكم. When I cry to the sky, لا إله إلا الله. When my soul asks why, لا إله إلا الله. When my heart gave way, لا إله إلا الله. When he taught me through delay, لا إله إلا الله. I remembered Yusuf, betrayed and sold, alone in the dark, yet his heart stayed bold. He never saw the throne from that prison cell, but Allah had a plan that the dream would tell. Like Musa chased from Pharaoh's gates, who spoke to Allah while carrying weight. Even Muhammad walked alone at night, but still spread mercy instead of spite. Their lives weren't ease, their hearts were fire. They weren't spared the test, they walk through the mire. فَإِنَّ مَعَ الْعُسْرِ يُسْرًا. When I cry to the sky, لا إله إلا الله. When my soul asks why, لا إله إلا الله. When my heart gave way, لا إله إلا الله. When he taught me through delay, لا إله إلا الله. He didn't give me what I asked, because I didn't ask for what would last. I asked for comfort, he gave me truth. I asked for money, he gave me proof. The trial was a mirror, not a wall, to show me that dunya is meant to fall. So I fell too straight into his grace, and found sukoon in my lowest place. وَمَنْ يَتَوَكَّلْ عَلَى اللَّهِ فَهُوَ حَسْبُهُ. When I cry to the sky, لا إله إلا الله. When my soul asks why, لا إله إلا الله. When my plans all die, لا إله إلا الله. He was always by my side, لا إله إلا الله. It's the mercies of God that has kept us alive. We will sing a new song for justice, and we will go through. You've got to focus your eyes on the prize. If you slip, you will slide, and from God you can't hide. We will sing a new song for justice, and we will go through. And if you don't have no love in your heart, then we'll have to depart, because you need love to start. To sing a new song for justice, for peace to go through. And although it can bite me down, I get stronger and stronger, I'm always around. I'm rooted and ground for justice. Sands of Arabia to the hills of Kashmir, voices rise in harmony, every heart sincere. In the markets of Cairo, the mosques of Turkey, the call to prayer echoes, the soul feels free. Oh, Ummah, stand as one under the moon, under the sun. From Rabat to Jakarta, we are free. Every land of Islam, unity is key. The rivers of Sudan flow with ancient grace. In the gardens of Shiraz, his mercy fills the space. From the deserts of Mali to the peaks of Iran, every nation whispers.
That's it for me, listeners. Thank you for tuning in. Until next week, this is your host, Alim Ali, saying peace out. And I leave you with Muhyiddin Chishti's last words, read by Sheikh Hamza Yusuf.
One of the greatest saints of our history was a great saint named Mu'inuddin Chisti. And the last talk that he gave to his students is how I'd like to talk to you, because I don't think I could do anything better than Mu'inuddin Chisti. He said to his students as he was departing the world, "Love all and hate none. Mere talk of peace will avail you not." One of the greatest saints of our history was a great saint named Mu'inuddin Chisti. And the last talk that he gave to his students is how I'd like to talk to you, because I don't think I could do anything better than Mu'inuddin Chisti. He said to his students as he was departing the world, "Love all and hate none. Mere talk of peace will avail you not. Mere talk of God and religion will not take you far. Bring out all the latent powers of your being and reveal the full magnificence of your immortal self. Be overflowing with peace and joy and scatter them wherever you go, wherever you are. Be a blazing fire of truth, be a beauteous blossom of love, and be a soothing balm of peace. With your spiritual light, dispel the darkness of ignorance, dissolve the clouds of discord and war, and spread goodwill, peace, and harmony among the people. Never seek any help, charity, or favors from anybody except God. Do not go to the courts of kings, but never refuse to bless and help the needy and the poor, the widow and the orphan, if they come to your door. This is your mission, to serve the people. Carry it out dutifully and courageously, so that I, as your teacher, will not be ashamed of any shortcomings on your part before Almighty God and our blessed predecessors in this silsila on the Day of Judgment. Alhamdulillah."
You are listening to WTOR 770 AM, Youngstown, Toronto.